Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday and we are stealing beer. It's a hall-free episode, but we do have our usual cohorts, Justin Kennedy, and we even have Brian Cass, B-Rizzle on the ones and twos on mic. Say hello, Brian.
What up?
It's not Monday, though. It's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday.
But it is 5 o'clock.
It is 5
somewhere
o'clock.
Near it.
And we're in my old neighborhood. We're over here at...
You used to live here?
I used to live on 13th and B, so we are on, what, 7th and C?
Yep.
So close enough. We're at ABC Beer Co. Thank you for hosting ABC Beer Co.
Thanks, Zach.
And what?
Zach is the owner.
Oh, thanks, Zach, of ABC Beer Co.
Yep.
And what drags us here, what brings us here, is there is an Allagash event going to kick off tonight. And we are lucky enough to have as our accomplice tonight, Jason Perkins, brewmaster of Allagash. What's up, dude?
Not much. Happy to be here.
Thanks for having me. Side beer right now is your beer. It's nice because it's your event. They just tapped a thing, a Little Brett, which is super tasty. Why don't we just kick off talking about it? What is Little Brett? It's recently released, right? I think this just came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's recently released in the 12-ounce form. We've been doing it several times in the draft form. We actually had a different name for a little while called Session Brett, but same beer. But yeah, it's a 100% Brett fermented. Low ABV beer, so you know 4.8 or so percent. Very simple in raw materials. One grain, our normal base malt, one yeast in the Brett, and one hop with Mosaic. But you know those three things together give us a pretty complex low ABV beer.
Sluttiest hop in the world. Definitely making me happy. It's super dry, super crisp. You say it's your house Brett, right? So
correct.
That's not from any of the places, obviously. But do you know if it's any of the BC strains of Brett, or is it just something you guys found in house over the years?
Yeah, we found it in house. We actually found it in a batch of beer, about 12 years ago. We had a batch of beer that unintentionally basically got infected with this local Brett that we. Obviously panicked about it first and were worried about, and then we were able to isolate it, and now we use it in a number of different beers. It's very unique. It's different than any other strains.
It's wicked dry,
with.
But nicely.
Certainly very dry. It's certainly got some of the kind of funky flavors you expect from a Brett, but they're a little more subdued than some of the other strains out there. It's kind of heavy on the tropical fruit character as well, which kind of plays nice with the Mosaic.
Yeah, no doubt. I actually was giving all that credit to Mosaic, so I'll have to try clean somewhere else. Now, has anybody named it and stolen it from you yet? Should we call it Brett A and just let that be Allagash? I don't think there's a Brett A yet.
Yeah, no, we do kind of playfully around, around the brewery call it Brettanomyces allagensis, and actually we have it banked at both Y Yeast and White Labs just in case something happens to it, and that's what they refer to it as well.
Right on.
It's not. So not something you can call them up and buy. But,
it's okay if you just say, Augie, that's a completely unoriginal idea. I get it.
No,
I'm so
I like
proud
it.
Of that because that makes an A, B, and C. And I can now say, this one's super dry like Brett A. Very cool. So you recently, Justin, went up to Allagash, right?
Because
you came back. But it was like this time last summer, wasn't it? Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, you're wrong on that. Last time I was there was in December, and we were brewing, or I watched them brew. Some of the cool ship beers, which was,
and that
really
was a
cool.
Year ago December. That was 18 months ago.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah, it was.
We're getting old.
Yeah, I know.
We've been doing the show a while, huh, bro?
We have.
Very fun. So here's the thing: I am going to use you to teach a lesson to all the thieves at home, because I get asked. I'm sure you get the same email, being a head brewer at a very serious brewery, but I am the head brewer owner of a very small brewery. So I think people are very comfortable sending me this email. And since, as far as I know, your story of brewing at Allagash, it is the right, honest, and true way to become a non-brewer, home brewer, real brewer, head brewer, a truly wonderful thing. So I want to talk about those steps, because I got another one of those emails recently that was like, look, dude, I'm 35. I want to chase my dream of being a brewer. Can I come work for you? And what I said to the guy was, look, go out and get your degree. Get a brewing degree. Start talking to people. if you don't want to get a brewing degree and you can't, then just start working for free and cleaning kegs for anybody. Once you've done that for a while, it'll turn into a job, and then that'll be your degree on your resume. Because once you've brewed, we know how to talk to you. But and to be fair, all the brewers. Well, all right, I have five brewers. Two came from other breweries. Three were home brewers when they started with me. But I was a new brewery 4 years ago, and these were people that got folded in. First, let's talk about your story, because you. Well, you tell it, but let's start. You grew up in Vermont, and then. Bring us to your beer career.
Yeah, I grew up in Vermont and you know, on a small farm, and ended up going to college in Maine at a small college called Bates College. And you know, I certainly drank plenty of beer like all college kids do, but I wasn't doing much on the brew side really until my brother introduced me to it. He was a home brewer. He's 2 years older than me, and just kind of fell in love with it. I mean, I think from the get-go, loved the idea of making something, you know, after growing up on a farm and, you know, where we, you know, raised a lot of our own food, whether it's vegetables or, you know, chickens and sheep and pigs and so on and so forth. It seemed very natural to me to do that. And then I, you know, moved to Montana, actually, and was living out there just kind of hanging out and waiting tables, and didn't like that too much. So I started knocking on doors and...
Where in Montana?
A town called Missoula, Montana, western Montana. And you know, I started knocking on doors, and a small brewery out there called Kettle House Brewing Company, which is about 10,000 or so barrels a year now. But when I was there, it was, you know, a couple hundred. It was teeny. And, you know, they hired me. And I, like, within a couple days, just instantly fell in love with the business. And, you know, like you referenced, it was initially just... You know, I was helping customers, I was cleaning floors, I was washing kegs. It was small, so I was able to get into brewing fairly quickly there.
What year was this, Jason?
This was 1998.
Okay.
And then I moved back to Maine, you know, and once again, you know, wanted a brewing gig. And I got a very short stint at Gritty McDuff's Brew Pub, which is, you know, I have a couple brew pubs in Maine. Worked at their Freeport location for about 6 months, and I knew it was a temporary gig right from the get-go. I knew that going in. And then just kept knocking on doors and managed to meet Rob at Allagash. I knew a little bit about him, but, I mean, he had only been open for a couple years at that point.
And now, real quick, so how long, a couple years, like two, 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, he opened in 95, and I met him in 98.
All
right, so and he was, you know, for the first year or so, he was totally solo. You know, when I started there was one other full-time employee other than Rob.
And this is that famed space that's been like four breweries since, right?
So yeah, so the
in Portland, there's this one place that just keeps getting handed down brewery to brewery. That's the space we're doing.
It's in that same industrial park. So the place where we started is we actually still use it. You know, there was a short period of time where we didn't, but we use it now for all our wild and funky beers, basically.
Okay, cool. Is that where the Cool Ship is?
The Cool Ship's not there, but that's where all the Cool Ship beer ages, okay, and we where we
get
bottle
it, there,
it and so
it
on and so
there.
Forth. Yeah. So yeah, and then it's just, you know, I did everything in Allagash as we had to at that size, and you know, it's been 17 and a half years later and I'm still there. So
right on. So to recap, and actually I want to ask you a question, because this is kind of how back when Carton started, my brew partner was a guy who used to was homebrewing and got all his stuff from Six Point, so we kind of have a relationship with Six Point and the brewers going back to before we were a brewery, because he was a Brooklyn resident home brewer and that was the easiest place to get stuff. So is it that kind of thing in Montana where you're homebrewing, they're a brewery down the street, you're going over there for advice and all that, and somehow you just talk your way into, like, did you ever work for free for them, I guess is what I'm saying, or was it,
we need
a counter dude and you're like, hey, I need a job?
Yeah, I never worked there for free, but I did get to know them from buying homebrew ingredients from them.
Okay, right.
They were, like I said, teeny, but they were, you know, they'd sell homebrewers little bags of grain.
Yeah.
There really wasn't a homebrew shop in town, so that was kind of it. There was a small one, but that was where
you
could
get the grain. And you were probably there a year or two?
I was there for a year.
All right, so a year, and then a give or take 6 months of Gritty McDuff's, and then finally it turns into, and your employee
at
1 through 10
At Allagash?
At Allagash.
You know, 3 or 4, depending on whether you talk about full-time or part-time. Right, but let's call it employee number 4 total, including Rob.
All right, so that seems to me to be the most genuinely honest, you know, true way to become a brewer, short of getting your degree from Siebel or Chico and you know,
sure,
coming in. Now, what happens to get a, so Allagash is now much bigger. How much? What's your volume these days? Like, what are you brewing here?
We'll do around 90,000 barrels this year.
90,000. So yeah, properly. Now, do you happen to know off the top of your head where that counts in the top 250 breweries? Because I just read that like 97% of that 4,000 number everybody's talking about is sub 7,500 barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So 3% of craft brewers make all of craft beer. So where on that spectrum is 100,000 these days? Being a 3,000 barrel guy,
sure.
I mean, we're
in the top 50 somewhere.
Okay,
and
right.
It kind of depends on how you define it, whether you just go with the BA defined craft or everybody. But either way, we're somewhere in that top 50.
So now 17 years later, you're at one of the top 50 craft brewers in America. One of the coolest. And one of the things I want to get to is your guys' commitment to a mission for all that time as things change around you. But I'm not ready to go there yet. So now let's say you got to be somewhere north of 50 employees with that many.
Yeah, we're on site,
not like around the world, you know, sales reps, but on site, how many people clock in at Allagash in a day?
We're probably somewhere around 90.
All right.
Because we're just over 100 total, and, you know, we've got, you know, some sales reps in the field.
All right, so say the same guy from My Jersey Story is a main guy. What do they do? They just send a resume, they keep showing up, they make friends, or you got to get a degree at that point because everybody that has a degree wants to, like, I want to work for you guys, so why would you hire some guy on Facebook, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, almost all of our hiring, it almost always is non-advertised hiring. It's, you know, people who have been knocking on the door or come at the right time, and we don't prioritize a degree. Just because of the way we train and hire and move people around within, and we've got plenty of roles that we can bring people in who fit, you know, fit our culture and fit in with the team. Certainly, being passionate about what we're doing is a very important piece of it. We can train skill in terms of the roles that we need there. You can't train, you know, passion and cultural fit at all. So. That being said, I mean, certainly if somebody has a degree and it also it displaces other things, they're going to have a leg up. But in the end, the majority of the people on our staff do not have any kind of formal brewing degree.
So it seems the trick is find a really small place in your hometown, find a way to work for them, make a step up and make another step up, and sooner or later you can be the head brewer at one of the coolest breweries in America, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do
it's
think
that,
that the dining, as we all know, the kind of the conditions or the dynamics have changed a lot in the last 5 years especially. So, you know, I think it's probably easier, you know, the barriers to entry for opening a brewery or getting a job at a brewery are maybe not as much as they were, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but I think in the end you still have to work your butt off, and a lot of people have it. We've often found that, and I'm sure you have too, that there's a misconceived notion about what it means to work at a brewery, right? I'm just going to come in and it's going to be all romance and, you know, tasting beers and designing beers, and that's not.
I often like to say, so over my lifetime, I've had a lot of careers, from women's underwear sales to movie making to tending bar to Wall Street to brewing. I have a very short attention span.
I've never heard the women's underwear story.
I was Victoria's Secret Catalog's most successful salesman in 95 and 96. But those are those Ohio years. But I always tell everybody, in every career I've ever had, the thing I want to see on your resume is that you're a waiter for more than a year at one place. The minute you can think to multitask at that level that hard, it means a lot more to me than most things. And that means in literally in every career I've ever had. But I guess that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, until you've filled ketchups after you had a $500 tip night,
yeah, sure.
I don't think you understand what it means to work anywhere.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And I guess that talks that. All right, so we got to talk about the beer in the glass. And I have the unholy task of doing this alone, right? Bcass, you have no beer to taste with me?
No.
All right.
I don't know what it is either.
And you know what it is, right? Yep. Justin knows what it is.
That's right. And
I believe, Jason, you picked it out of the fridge here, right?
Sure did.
But you know what it is, obviously. You chose it because you know it. Because ABC is a good... You clearly had a couple to pick from, right? It's not like...
There's a great selection here.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. I've carefully avoided looking in the fridge because I didn't want to know. All right, so I'm just going to give notes, and I really wish Hall was here to bounce off because I'm very uncomfortable here. When I started, I had a ton of fruit and some chocolate notes that I thought were malts. Now that I've been sipping on it for a while, I think I'm somewhere in a Belgian double because it feels like it's like Special B and maybe even some candy sugar, and that sour isn't sour, but it's a Belgian yeast. I love how it comes on big when it's in your mouth. It's this really rich, like very rich feel, and the palate's fantastic, but when you're done, it goes away, which makes me think it's a more kind of classic style of beer or mimicking a more classic style of beer. But in the short amount of 3 ounces I've sipped, in the short amount of time, it's literally done 8 different things in my head, which I've learned means classic old world style, which is why I'm settling on something like a Belgian double. But I'm also sitting here with the head brewer of one of the only 2 breweries in America with the conviction to stand behind a Belgian tradition. So I don't want that to be 100%.
Who's the other one?
Omegang.
Okay.
No? Sure. No, would we sure. not agree that Omegang stands by being Belgian primarily?
Yeah, sure.
A lot of people say they're Belgian and then hand me an IPA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not trying to...
No, I was just curious.
I'm not big upping anybody or talking down anybody, but there's a million people in the world that say we come deeply from the Belgian tradition and then hand me a Chico yeasted Citra hopped IPA because they have to. And I think the two guys that haven't had to are... You know, unless I'm wrong, if I'm missing somebody else,
no, I was
add
just
them to
curious
the list.
Who you're thinking of.
No, that's fine. But like I said, I'm doubting all my decisions. I'm going to give one last sip. I'm not going to say what it is because that's not the job. We all know what brings us together is the blind tasting and talking about what the beer is. Hold on. Say what do you think?
Is this beer for me?
Yeah, that's yours.
All right, good.
You should be drinking it with me.
Oh, sorry.
You're welcome to do everything, but tell me what it is or guide me towards what it is. The whole idea here is that we want to talk about what beer is and not what it should be or what it was meant to be. So the black glass takes all that out. Usually it's me and John Hall. John's got a great palate. And it's just, what is the beer in the glass without any pretense? We just think craft beer is getting a little too silly and sanctimonious and self-important, and certain ideas carry too much weight. So we go in the black glass, we drink blind, we're just trying to talk about what this beer is, and then the job I'm about to do is write the sentence. So where do I want this beer? Who do I want it with? Where do I want to be? And that way, there's no pedigree behind it, right? But yeah, it's for me, it's a big, rich dish food beer. Although I would happily put it in the middle, you know, if we're talking about the day of drinking from noon to midnight, this is your 9 o'clock beer. It's nice and rich. It's pretty. It does its own thing. It's not showing. There's no one thing winning the game of the 4 ingredients in it. But really, I want it with somewhere between like a good fennel salami plate and a stew. Right? I think it's got enough fruitiness and all that to play off a well-cooked stew. I think it's there, but I think the salami thing would be more fun because I think it's a beer I want to enjoy with people. I want to imagine like a 750 middle of a table, all of us just sitting around bullshitting, throwing salami in our mouth and drinking this with it. So that's where I'm putting it. Now, your job, Jason, is tell me what you think of what I thought, what you think of it compared to what you thought it would be and what it fucking is.
I thought that was very eloquently put.
And horribly wrong. It's a Pilsner.
No, it's not a Pilsner. Really
I've called a Pilsner a milk stout twice on this show. There's some roast people use on Pilsners and some yeast that shows, and I'm like, it's clearly black, right? It's a fucking American Pilsner.
You're in the ballpark, Augie. So,
you're definitely in the ballpark and well described. This is a beer that it's about what I expected it to be. It's a beer from a brewery. One of my favorite breweries in the world, and certainly one of my favorite breweries in Belgium. And I always find it interesting to get it in the U.S. because of the way that they make beer there is very old world for sure, with maybe not the same kind of quality control measures that a larger brewery would have. So when you have it in the U.S., it's often quite different than, certainly different than when you have it at the brewery there, but different each time you buy it, basically. Ready for me to tell you what it is?
Yeah.
So
this sentence is written. From now it's free game.
This is a Dulatev which is a triple from the Dodola Brewery.
This is a yellow beer?
It is. But it's interesting because,
I never would have.
Like I referenced, this beer gets some age on it, like any import beer does, and will get take on some oxidation, and will really give some of those caramelized flavors to it. So
all that fruitiness is yeast?
Yeah, their yeast
there's
is amazing.
There's no candy sugar in this? There's no special B at all?
I'm sure that there's
a ton of fruit.
Yeah, the yeast that they use is a remarkable strain with just really intense fruity esters. But you're also getting some oxidation from travel time and maybe not the top end.
Yeah, and I know oxygen can do to that. Sure. But you know what I mean? Like, I got none of the cardboard shit that would lead me that way. I get what you're saying, yeah. and I could see how that could richen it up a touch. But I got none of those. You know, shitty, flat, dull oxidation sure. flavors as well.
The interesting thing, too, that this brewery cools all of their wort in a cool ship and then over a bottle of cooler. So, you know, in theory, their beers are not wild beers because they're fermenting with their house strain. But in reality, you know, every one of their beers has a count of some kind of natural microbes that are in that environment. And so depending on when you get the beer in the U.S., you can get a developed sourness in the beer as well.
But I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be super neat. That. So just to recap in English for the non-brewing thieves, to chill the wort, they throw it through an open-top vessel, which is the cool ship we're talking about, which more often than not, when you say cool ship, especially in the case of Allagash, you're talking about to pick up infection.
Correct.
But rather than going in a closed-circuit chiller, they're using an open-circuit chiller and not leaving it there for time to grab dirty yeast.
Exactly.
But obviously, because it's in the microbial temperature for a period open top, it runs and is in the air of where that's just everywhere, runs a chance of picking up all these other microbes we always talk about.
Yeah, correct. Yep.
Very cool. Man, that's a fun beer and a boozy beer. Now I understand
beer.
Why I
it
turned red beer. While we were talking.
Yeah.
I thought I was just embarrassed to be with the brewery. So let's talk about that. So now You are head brewer, have been at least 10 years. It's clearly your brewery. Everybody, you know what I mean? It's your beers. You work closely with the owner, Rob Todd, and he's been doing this now 17 years, you said? What's the math on the years?
21 years. 21 years at the July 1st, technically, I guess. This will be the anniversary, so.
Right on. So 21 years he's been doing it. He opens as a guy making Belgian beers in Maine before there was a Maine Beer Co., before there was a Northeast tradition of dirty, hoppy, pleasing fruit things. And he says he's going to be Belgian, and you guys have stuck to that. Now, let's talk about the fact that you and I are sharing a Brett Fermented Session mosaic, right? Because that's clearly making something that I would make if I was big enough and had that. Like, if you give me a tank to fool around in, a Brett C, fruity hopped, small beer, I don't think you use any wheat in this, right? I would put some wheat in it because I want the Brett C to eat that and get a little, you know, get a little warmer. But this is the beer, I swear to you, every time anybody talks about collaboration, we sit down, we make the hoppy, small, Brett-fermented beer, and then neither one of us has a tank we're willing to put Brett in because we're nervous. So that part of, I want to isolate that because that's how I can still say you're clearly true to your tradition while making a mosaic hop small beer. How much of that is just obstinance on your guys' part? How much of that is just confidence having done it longer than everybody else, so it doesn't matter, you don't need to chase, people know that we can go get your 16 county or your 4 or all the other beers you guys make? White obviously is one of the greatest in the world. Talk to me about staying firm. You know, not that the path doesn't bend, but you guys haven't made any of the rights or lefts that a lot of people feel the need to make. How, one, is it awesome? Are you, since it is you and Rob, do you want to be making big dopey IPAs? Or is this, you know, is this also your dream? Like, how's that play out? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the short answer is, you know, I couldn't be happier with the direction we've chosen to take over the years. There have been times in our history where making a decision of not doing a, you know, a 12-pack or not doing a summer seasonal, like things we've never done, was a hard decision to make because we needed, you know, some people would have been telling us, our wholesalers certainly at times told us, this is what you need to do. You need to sell more beer. This is how you're going to do it. And You know, a lot of that, if not all of that credit goes to Rob for kind of staying true to who we are and you know, instead of going that route, you know, coming out, putting our beer in four packs because that's what it took for us to actually turn a profit instead of going in the opposite direction. So I think it's suited us really well to kind of stay true to who we are. We also are fortunate that, you know, to follow a tradition like Belgian style brewing really gives us still a pretty wide open canvas.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're not as tied if we were making, if we said we are steadfast German style brewers, you know, I love German beers, but, you know, we'd have a little bit more of a box to live in, and our box is a little bit bigger and we can fool around a little bit more. You know, we're still not going to, you know, I guess never say never. We're not going to do a double IPA or anything like that. But we can come out with Hugh Malone, a beer we make once a year that's got a big hop aroma. And if you had to categorize it, it's a Belgian-style IPA, but it's still big, ester-driven.
You know, and since yeast-driven. That is not a fucking category, we won't do that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I think...
It's a category in an article some idiot just wrote for Lucky Peach. But it is not... By the way, congratulations on that. We've got to talk about
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Go on.
Yeah, so anyway, we can stay true to who we are and still have a lot of flexibility to do fun things. You know, Little Brett's a great example of that. A beer that, you know, is hop, really, it's not exclusively hop-driven, but it's a big part of it, certainly.
But it's also not what it is. It is a beer that takes advantage. It's, like I said, it's a beer I want to make, but... We're not big enough. We're not old enough. We're not. I don't trust us necessarily with Brett in our house yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clearly a beer you guys can do because you are down the Belgian line, well established with your own house, Brett. You know exactly what it's going to do every day. So presented with those same tools, I think it's a very Belgian thing to be like, well, that hop's fun, right? Because the Belgians don't have any hop rules. They can buy from anywhere in the world. They're
exactly.
Not German, like you said. So fuck it. Here's a cool hop. It'll play well with our awesomely dry. Like, this is a crisp, fun to drink. I'm so afraid to say this sentence, but it drinks more like a lager than most ales, right? It's super crisp, it's super dry. It ends on a stony minerality. It's very fresh, and it's not, well, talk about it. You brew it. How late are the hops on this? Is there much dry hop in it at all? Because it feels like everything's kind of stiff, but is it much?
But
you know what I mean? Is it mostly
heavy,
like two whirlpool?
It's heavy whirlpool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, literally a handful, which, you know, may sound like a decent amount, but for a 75 barrel brew, it's not. For the bittering edition, is literally a handful, and then the whirlpool hop is huge, several buckets worth. And then we do dry hop, but at that point in the game, really what we're looking to do is to kind of bring back a little bit of what's lost.
Right.
Because when you make a beer with our house bread, especially, it's even as a low ABV beer, it's time consuming. So this is still about a 60 to 70 day beer fermentation. So we lose a little bit of that freshness.
So that's another reason I could never make this beer.
There's a reason why we probably shouldn't make it. But and so we add some dry hop back in to kind of bring a little bit of that back.
But that's got
to
be the best. You just said the best sentence about why even I, who have a brewery, want your job. You can make beers you shouldn't make. That's the best thing. I think that's the best thing about some breweries in America. And Allagash is one of the few. Yeah, you can't make that. Nobody can make a 70-day beer. Like, that's fantastic. Nobody can make a 70-day 4% beer, right?
Yeah. That's got
imagine?
Bread in it. Exactly.
You were talking before about the torture of wholesalers, and I imagine the obstinance to stay true to a mission has been very hard in your wholesaler relationships. But I can't imagine any discussion worse than, okay, we're going to give you four packs of a 4.5% beer. Every now and then, it's going to be Brett's Funky Fermented. There's some mosaic in it, but it doesn't show like Kool-Aid.
Right.
Go sell
that
shit.
Not going to be cheap.
Go sell that shit. Have a good time, people. Yeah. That's awesome. That's the perfect beer. I think this is my new favorite beer in America. Very cool. So let's talk about... So I got to get to beer, too. I'm going to start drinking. While I do, let's do those questions the thieves wish I would ask you, like... The head brewer Allagash, what's your favorite malt? What's your favorite hop? What's your favorite yeast these days? Like, just ideas, just free form. You and I are about to make a beer together on our homebrew system in buckets. What's the base malt? What's your favorite hop for, call it at Whirlpool, right? Nobody cares what you bitter with. But and outside the Allagash, because Allagash uses a lot of yeast, right? Even though you guys all have a ton of house yeast, you're not stuck on any yeast, right? You can fool around any you want. So talk about that while I sip and think, because there's a lot of weight on the Belgian triple. I called it double like an ass.
Yeah, that's a long question, but let me think here. I mean, I can tell you that right now, and I'm not just saying this because the farmer who grew it is sitting next to me, but he is. We are really excited that we're able to use some locally grown and locally malted barley. And we've got our
beer. There's a maltster, and you guys are still in Portland, right? You're just not where you were?
Yeah, we're still in Portland. We're basically where we started. So our maltster that I'm referring to, Maine Malt House, is actually located in Mapleton, Maine, which is quite a bit north of us. You know, there's a lot of different crops that are grown in northern Maine, and barley's one that's been grown for many years, and the Buck family's been growing barley for generations, really as a rotational crop for, you know, working in with potatoes and other crops they're growing. But just recently has started malting, and really they have a small facility, but they've put in it's a very nice facility, and the quality has been fantastic, and so we've been really excited to work with their grains. We have a new beer called 16 Counties, which is exclusively brewed with Maine grown.
But you've been making it for like 2 years, right? The idea is that it's something from every corner of Maine.
This version is
Come down here. I've only heard about
just it. Just now. It should be now.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to try it. I just haven't had it yet. I know it exists. It's fruited too, right? Sorry to interrupt, but just so that beer is understood.
It's not. And so there's a little confusion behind it because we actually brewed a beer under the same name that was a wet hop beer.
Okay.
So it also had local grains and local wet hops, and we kind of stole the name because we loved it. There's 16 counties in the state of Maine. It seemed like a great name. So we kind of moved that over to the new beer. And so this beer is made with locally grown and malted barley, locally grown and processed raw wheat and raw oats.
Okay.
And so for one malt that we're excited to work with these days, you know, I would say this malted barley that we're working with from Maine Malt House. There's another malt house also called Blue Ox. So we're lucky to have two in the state. And there's
doesn't
just,
New York just get one?
There's a couple now, but yeah.
But typically, didn't New York have to send their malts to Massachusetts to be malted?
Valley Malt, yeah.
Right. Sorry, then, I just to clarify what's being said here, you have two maltsters you work with in your own state. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's nice to see what the growth of, you know, craft beer has done for other, you know, obviously it's done great things for us as a brewery, for us to grow. It's done great things for the consumer because they got all these interesting great beers to try. But it's also nice to see the other, industries, I guess you could say, that are benefiting from it. And
yeah,
the Buck family was pretty cool, smart to kind of be like, hey, I'm seeing this growth here. We're growing barley already. Let's see if we can malt it.
Yeah, so. I lived in Bath for 1 year. Sure. I was a terrible student and went to that school for terrible kids in Bath. Some of you know what I'm talking about. But
was that high school, Augie?
That's the high school. That's where very bad children are sent. all I knew about Maine was broccoli. So 1 year in 1984 in Maine taught me that they grow broccoli in Maine. But I'm glad to hear they grow.
We grow lots of things.
Lots of things we could be making beer with. Because when you said we're using local, I was like, oh, God, broccoli beer. That's fun. It's okay. So what hop? Question, because I was thinking while you're saying it. Obviously, the yeast is a house yeast, again. And the water is clearly local. Is the hop a Maine-grown hop as well?
It is not. I mean, okay. Someday we'd like it. The hop kind of industry, I guess you could say, in Maine is just got a long ways to go. And there's a couple folks who are doing a really good job with it so far. And growing wise, they're doing a good job. But the big challenge with hops, as you know, is not just the growing. It's the
Something that matured quickly.
And processing.
It still gets humid up there. And nobody's going to pelletize it for you, right?
They're working towards it. So okay. I'm hopeful. They're hoping, a couple of these farms are hoping to grow. And, you know, we would love to work some of those hops into that beer. At the moment, the quantities they're producing are so small anyway that it wouldn't even make sense.
But, right. Yeah. So basically you can pilot with them and hope they come into their own and know what to do the minute they're ready.
We've been supporting them as much as we can because we want them to grow. Yeah. And. You know, I'm hopeful. It's a tough industry.
If you were going to throw together let's say we're outside Allagash, you're brewing with me, and now we're going to brew a big dopey American IPA. What's the hop you're putting in it right now?
You know, we actually did this with a beer we just brewed recently that we'll be selling in our store actually this weekend, but.
So everybody that listens to this, you missed it by 3 weeks.
Yeah, so
because this one's there,
it's gone.
It'll be next week.
Gone.
Yeah. This is next week's episode.
This will be right, aired, this is a pretty current episode. From now,
right yeah. on. All right, so there's a chance, Mainers, get out there.
So there's two hops we use in that on the dry hop side.
What is the beer?
It's called Hoppy Table Beer.
Hoppy Table Beer.
Yeah, so it's, you know, once again, a 4.5%. We use our house yeast. We use a little some coriander in there as well. You know, Belgian. So you get our house esters, you get a little bit of coriander in there. And we used Azaka, which I've really loved. I think it works well with the Belgian esters. It's certainly, I would never call it non-aggressive because it's got plenty of aroma there, but it doesn't, it's not overly aggressive.
Yeah,
but the other hop we use, which I really like a lot that is less used, is Comet.
Yep. You know, we use Comet in both. Don't tell anybody.
I won't. I like but it I love the citrus component that it has, but once again, not incredibly aggressively so.
Right on. No, that's very cool. All right, so there's the questions for those of you who told me to ask that of real brewers when they show up. I've asked them. Let's talk about this beer. I'm not going to go deep into what it is because it feels to me like it's just a pretty good IPA, right? Like, I don't want to upset anybody, but mostly what I'm getting is hop character. When it was just poured, I had a lot of aromatics. Now it's landing nicely on a bitterness I like. It's in line with those... You know, the Sierra IPAs I like when people bring them on.
Yeah.
The hops are a little more modern, a little more fruity, a little more slutty. But the beer itself is constructed to show off hops. Like I said, new, fresh, poured in the glass. It was big aromatics. So I didn't get a ton of bitter. Now that I've been sipping and we've been talking, it's got enough bitter to feel truly IPA to me without going too far. It's a nice solid IPA, and it's one I'd happily buy a six-pack of, right? These days, there's a lot of IPAs I just want one of. I'd buy a six-pack. I'd put it in cold water. I'd hang out with you guys and drink it and talk about it, and that's about it.
That sounds good to me.
You know what it is, right?
I do.
Is there any notes I miss? Like, is there any fruit character notes you want to give?
Well, there's
it?
Something I thought I would get from it, but I don't, really. Jason can talk a little bit about this, about what it is and... where it's from, and
yeah, this was a different one because I'd only had this beer once before.
Okay,
but it's from a new brewery. It's a brewery called Black Hog Brewing Company, and I chose it because I'd had the beer once before. I kind of liked it, but it's one of the owners and the head brewer there is. An old friend who used to be
Ginger Ninja. Yeah. It's a great fucking name.
Ginger Ninja is the
Ginger
name of it.
Ginger Ninja. I was discovered by the Ninja Ninja.
Canned by yours truly.
Oh, Brian, you canned it.
Yes. That's why it tastes terrible.
No, that's why it tastes delicious. That's my favorite beer from Black Hog.
So Tyler is one of the owners there and used to be the head brewer at Portsmouth Brewing Company in Portsmouth, just across the border from us. And he's
Where
a good
are
guy.
These guys?
They're in Connecticut. I forget the exact town, to be honest with you.
Oxford, Connecticut.
There you go.
Oxford, okay. Yep.
So, yeah, and I have this interesting thing I've found over the last couple of years with ginger.
There's ginger in it?
There is ginger.
That's what I was missing. Yeah.
Can't really speak to it, but it doesn't sound like you got it either. But
nope.
I am kind of blind to ginger. I love it in food, and I use it when I cook. But there's something about it in beer that I have a hard time identifying it. We've brewed a couple beers. We have a beer, our Fluxus, this year coming out, has a ginger component to it.
I use ginger in a couple of beers.
And I have to kind of defer to the rest of the brew staff because I'm like, I don't get any ginger. And they're like, are you crazy? This thing's full of ginger.
Isn't it?
So it's funny how you learn what things you're maybe not as good
at
tasting.
It's like Augie with diacetyl.
Yeah, so what's funny is I'm wicked, wicked sensitive to TCA from Corks.
Yeah.
And literally the only way I know diacetyl is by feel. I don't smell it like everybody else.
Sure.
I know when it's in a beer because of the feeling on my tongue. But I don't smell it. And luckily, my first brewer and my new brewer, but both brewers I've worked with are wickedly diacetyl sensitive because I've got to defer. Like I know if you tell me there's diacetyl beer, I can look for it and I can tell you if I think it's a lot or a little.
Sure.
And I tend to figure it out, but it's not something. But it's not something I smell, so I just... We're okay, right? Sorry, thieves at home. That's how that went, but we're okay. But it's not something I smell right off the bat, so you got to tell me to look for it, and then I can find it.
Yeah, but I think they say something like 20% of people are blind to the acetyl.
Yeah, well, TCA is the worst, right? Because it plays as Corks or celery, and some people think that should be in a thing. And if you're sensitive like me, you get it, and you can't get the thing to your nose,
sure.
And everybody else thinks you're just being a pompous douchebag. It's like, it's corked. And on beer, that's tough. On wine, it's kind of okay. Anyway, we are at the end of the show. I'm going to say thank you. Justin's going to read us a letter. I'd love it if you listened in case it's something you can offer some insight on. But that was, thank you for coming out, man. This
absolutely,
was, I
fun.
Told you, it's fun to BS over a couple beers absolutely. On Steal This Beer. I appreciate your being here. Thank you.
All right, this is from Nick. He says, on the Green Flash Alpine episode, Augie mentioned his hate of crowlers. Can you expand on that? Why do you hate crowlers, Augie?
Why do I hate crowlers?
Yeah.
First, before I establish and make an argument that can't be refuted, what do you think of crowlers, Jason? How do you feel on them?
I honestly don't have a ton of experience with them, but I kind of feel the same way about... I think my problem with crowlers is the same problem I have with growlers, and that more has to do with handing over an incredibly critical part of... And I'm talking about growlers or crowlers outside of our facility.
Okay.
So, you know, handing over, you know, one of the most critical pieces of brewing process, that being packaging, to somebody else... So you
guys don't do growlers at
we the don't, brewery? And if we ever did growlers at the brewery, we would do it, with heavyweight, pressure rated growlers in a, with a cleaning system and a counter pressure filler with Priovac, et cetera, and make it as quality as any of the other packages we use. What I hate to see is the growler stations out there, and I'm sure some do it fine, but. It's like I said, you're handing a huge quality control piece away to somebody else, and we can do everything we can to make that beer what it's supposed to be, and it can be completely ruined by, you know, a dirty growler, a poor draft system, et cetera. So right. That's my little soapbox.
So I like it because it leads into my soapbox quite conveniently. Number one is I love growlers. I don't mind them as much as you, but it's important to know that in Jersey we had all kinds of rules about what we were allowed to sell that just changed, and growlers were the only way to do it. But the truth is, the brown glass shitty growler, I think, very clearly conveys that this is a jug to get you home. Right?
True.
So you want a draft beer at home, you get home, you drink it. And that's fine, and to me that makes perfect sense. And if you buy it from me, and even if you buy my beer at a shop, the growler kind of connotes to most sensible people, you got a couple days to drink this beer. Now, you and I have both heard miracle stories about clamping it down and evacuating air in a growler lasting 2 years, and that's great. But I think 90% of the time when you buy a brown glass growler, you know you have a couple days to drink this, and once you open it, you got to finish it. Now, I think growlers are the best way to get beer home from your brewery. They're recycled. Once a person buys a growler, they bring it back to you. We clean them. We give them back to you full. That's great. Blah, 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 blah. The crowler is the opposite of that. The reason the can is better than the bottle is because the aluminum's recycled more. There's less weight. It burns less fuel. There's all these arguments for why aluminum is better than glass in packaged beer that fall apart at crowler because now you've created a one-use growler. You've taken the most recycled thing in the beer industry and made it a single-use thing. So that's my first complaint with them. They're literally garbage, whereas a growler is a 100-use tool.
That's a good point.
Two, because they appear to be a can, people think they're going to last forever, right? The nice part about cans, we can at the brewery with Ironheart, with Brian here actually cans my beers. With proper O2 measurements and no pickup, and the headspace is better in a can than in a bottle, there's a million reasons you could just put a can away and let it last for 6 months. I'm not one of those guys who thinks you have to drink an IPA if it was canned next week. I actually understand integration and maturity, and I believe that's the right thing for American IPAs. But when you give that perception in a can that clearly had oxygen pickup, it's a giant top, it's poured through a hose, it's not going to stay. But because it's this sealed can, people think it's going to last forever, right? And the screw-on cap brown growler says to me, I got to drink this thing. It's essentially milk at that point, right? Nobody waits 6 months to drink milk. Put milk in an aluminum can, they won't even put it in the refrigerator. So Those are the fundamental arguments I have with crowlers. I think crowlers are the worst thing in the beer business, but I think cans are the best thing in the beer business, and somehow the two are being conflated, and they're not. Like, when we fill a can, we evacuate oxygen. when somebody fills a growler, they've literally taken a bad situation and permanently sealed it in aluminum. And that's why. All right? You can write us in with a follow-up question if you want. Thank you for writing us. Now, Justin, if somebody else wants to write us and be berated for their growler idea, what do they do?
They can do it at stealthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com.
And if they wanted to tweet us?
At stealthisbeer.
And if they wanted to see your pretty face on Instagram?
At stealthisbeer.
And
untapped.
Oh, yeah. Same thing. We all around. All same thing.
Yeah. Steal this beer on most of your social medias. And something I'd like to mention, because this is congratulations. We all know there's not many things I respect in food, wine, and beer. And one of them is David Chang's Lucky Peach magazine. I have every issue. Like, I'm a comic book collector, plastic sealed in a bag in my house. The plastic bag part's a lie.
The first one's worth about $300?
I have it.
Yeah.
If you want it, you let me know. Can you sign it for me? But sure. Justin's just started writing an article for them, and I think that's pretty badass, because that's a life achievement.
It's going to be a series of articles.
That's what I'm saying, but that's a big fucking achievement. Yeah, congratulations. Cool. So, guys, look out for Lucky Peach online or whatever, and check out what Justin's writing.
Thank you.
Jason, thanks so much for coming out, dude. We appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Get at us, guys. Let us know what you think.
Thanks.